Hi, and welcome to the Macro Show. We talk macro, and you wonder, is this a sign that real estate prices have peaked? We've got that. Did the Fed have a plan all along to keep the banks from selling treasury securities? They did. I'm going to show that to you. We got the money multiplier. We've got economic data, and dealer positioning. And we even have evidence. Credit is contracting on a year-over-year basis. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and let's get right into this. Now, several of you have mentioned you enjoyed the write-ups that I have done recently, and so I did another one. This is not an email list. There's no email list for it. It's not going to be an email list. How do you get it? Well, I'll announce it on the show, and if you want to see it perhaps a little bit sooner, you can follow me on LinkedIn, Twitter, or Facebook, and it will get posted to all of those. I will put the link in the description for those of you who have not seen it and would like to read it. All right, let's get into the headline. Is this a sign that real estate prices have peaked? Well, we've got real estate loan growth on a year-over-year basis. Now, I don't have a ton of data, so you can take it for what it's worth. This Q4 2004 against the S&P/Case-Shiller U.S. National Home Price Index. And here you can see going back to, say, 2006, 2007, home prices looked like they were peaking. And there was a deceleration on this year over year in real estate loan growth. And look what's happening now. It's gone negative. It's contracting. Home prices are still rising. Is this it? Is this a sign that perhaps we're very close to the peak in real estate prices? Maybe. It'll be interesting because you notice that these two, well, they tend to follow each other. And the contraction in real estate lending is real. So will real estate lending grow and catch up with prices, or are prices headed quite a bit lower? Now let's look at what the Federal Reserve have planned. You're gonna love this. This is great. And I wanna preface this. You have to remember all these people that said, look, the banks are gonna dump treasury securities and the Fed, you know, the Fed's gonna be a fool to let this SLR exemption expire. And they did, and everyone's like, aha, let's go short some more bonds because this is it, this is the end. You're going to be surprised what the banks did this week. But I want to show you how this was already known. And this is one of the things I struggle with when I hear all these, you know, mainstream people, I hear these, even the insiders of the banks, you know, say these things. But, you know, I'm a hands-on king. You know, I get the shovel out and I go digging for the truth. I'm right there with you. You know, I get my hands dirty. I want to find the truth. And maybe, let's just look. I think this is really cool. So on March 25th, this was yesterday, the Federal Reserve announces temporary and additional restrictions. Didn't I say this is happening on bank, holding company, dividend, and share purchases? Currently in place will end for most firms after June 30th. So they have to go another 3 months. Oh, and it's based on results from an upcoming stress test. By the way, that stress test was already planned. The banks go through a stress test. Most of them go through a stress test once a year. Some go every 2 years. This was already known. Okay, so let's take a look at some of the details. So firms, this will end after the stress test. So firms with capital levels above those required by the stress test will no longer be subject to the additional restrictions as of that date. Firms with capital levels below will remain with the restrictions. So let's just translate this real quick, because these are open book tests. The banks are given, here's your stress test, here's the answers. This is what we want to see. You do what we want, we give you what you want. So I want you to see that the Fed has already planned to take care of this problem to keep banks from selling treasury securities. In fact, there probably is somewhere in here that we're not gonna see in writing that they're trying to encourage banks to buy more, because who wrote the stress test? The Fed. So, hey, you wanna buy your stocks back and pay yourself bonuses? Fine, and pay bigger dividends? You do what we say. So let's dig around here a little bit deeper. So we find out that due to economic uncertainty, due to COVID, the board, when they say board, you hear Fed, put temporary and additional restrictions on capital distributions. Okay, so now let's go and dig a little bit deeper here. Normally, a bank's capital distributions are restricted principally by the board's stress capital buffer, which we'll go look up, or SCB framework. The SCB sets a capital target for each bank based on its individual stress test results. So the Fed is creating targets for each bank which requires, check this out, the bank to hold at least enough capital to survive a severe recession. And if a firm does not meet the target, automatic restrictions are imposed. So let's keep going here and see. All right. So now what is this? Oh, here, if bank remains above its minimum requirements, yeah, okay. Now let's go look up what this stress capital buffer is. And I want to point out that the date of this press release from the Fed is March 4, 2020. Now, did they know that on April 1st they were going to do an SLR exemption? Probably not. But this thing is really cool. So the Federal Reserve Board approves rule to simplify its capital rules for large banks, preserving the strong capital requirements already in place. So let's go down here and find out. The stress capital buffer, SCB, integrates the board's stress test results with its non-stress test capital requirements. As a result, required capital levels for each firm would more closely match its risk profile and likely losses measured via the board stress test. So effectively, they're saying, look, we're going to make a test for every bank based on what we know about them and their risk. This rule is broadly similar to the proposal from April 18, 2018. Okay, big deal. Let's go on and see if we can find the answer to what I'm looking for. Aha, there it is. The SCB framework preserves the strong capital requirements established after the financial crisis. Remember, all this stuff is post-GFC, right? You bad banks, you caused this crisis, so we're going to penalize you. Keep in mind, the penalty for the Fed is always we got to buy more Treasury securities. All right, in particular, the changes would increase capital requirements for the largest and most complex banks and decrease requirements for the less complex banks. Based on stress test data from 2013 to 2019, check this out. This is the key part. Common equity tier one capital requirements, which is the numerator in the SLR ratio, would increase by $11 billion in aggregate, a 1% increase from current capital requirements. So a firm's SCB will vary in size throughout the economic cycle depending on severe factors. So to reduce the incentive for firms to take on risk and further simplify the framework, the final rule does not include a stress leverage buffer as proposed. All banks would continue to be subject to an ongoing non-stress leverage requirement. So pretty much what this says is, look, the Fed pretty much uses their magic behind the scenes to create these tests for all the different banks. Fed determines what the test needs to look like and what the answer is, which involves increasing the tier one capital. Remember, everyone said, oh, the banks aren't going to, they're not going to increase the tier one capital. They're going to sell Treasury securities. From more than a year ago, the Fed knew that could happen, and they built in a plan to make sure that they would force the banks to increase their tier one capital and reduce their risk, all based on stress tests. Now, what do you think that when the Fed does these tests for each individual bank, do you think that somehow that tier one capital number is going to go up enough to make sure the SLR ratio is at least 5%, which is what it takes to do your distributions and pay your bonuses? Yeah. I'll bet you it does exactly that. And so now we've got 3 months for the banks to clean up their bad loans, you know, curtail risk, maybe take some of that and shift it into Treasury securities and boost their tier one capital based on what the Fed wants. And then at the end of next quarter, assuming they play the game, which you would presume that they will want to, they will be free to go about their business. So there it is. This was already all known. And that's why I never stop digging. Yeah, sometimes I misreport things because I don't know all the answers, but I don't stop digging because somewhere the truth is out there. And it just so happened it's on the Federal Reserve website. All right, let's go on to the money multiplier. So now we're back to this, not back to, we're on the monthly M2 and monetary base because of some changes in Regulation D. We no longer have weekly or bi-monthly data. And so this is a money multiplier, which is a sign of a liquidity trap. So when the money multiplier is falling, that is an indication of disinflation or deflation. Now you wonder why I'm only pulling the chart back to 2009, because I'm only concerned right now of what happened due to QE. And what we're seeing here is this is going down. And why is it going down? Is because the monetary base is growing at a more proportional rate. Let me say that again, a more proportional rate than the money supply. And when you have that happen, you get a disinflationary environment. This is the liquidity trap in graphical form. Now, what's interesting, you can see this move here in January. Why was that from the December stimulus? So what are we likely to see in February, in March and April, perhaps, maybe, I don't know if it'll go all the way, probably a bit into April, is we should see an increase, something similar. But we're also seeing something interesting in the credit markets, which we'll look at shortly. So I want to show you, this is the core CPI, excluding food and energy. We recently looked at, the dollar has a very large influence on energy and food prices. So if we're looking at inflation, we're going to look at the core, and we see core inflation is following to a large degree, except coming out of the financial crisis, what's going on with the money multiplier. It makes sense. So you could see the core in red is going down when everyone says it should be going up because of the liquidity trap created by the money multiplier and quantitative easing. Here it is against 30-year treasury yields. And you'll notice that anytime yields are rising, as the money multiplier is falling, those higher yields get rejected every time. And as we've looked in the past, they lead to new all-time lows in yields every time. New all-time lows in yields. That's how I can be bond bullish, my friends. That's how I can be bond bullish. All right, here is, this is not the chart I wanted. Oh, well, I had a chart, but this isn't it. All right, let's move on to the economic data. Hey, even though I record this and upload it, it's recorded live with no editing. All right, listen, I'll get that chart for Monday that I wanted to show you or try to remember. Let's look at the economic data going back to yesterday. Initial jobless claims. Hey, this is pretty good news. For the first time in a year, because we had 52 straight weeks of initial claims over 700,000, something I believe has never happened before. It finally fell below 684,000. Still a massive amount of jobless claims. How about the total claims, including all forms of pandemic insurance, sitting at 19 million, up 733,000. A lot of people still out of work. No sign of recovery here in this data. What else do we have from Thursday? Kansas City Fed Manufacturing Index. Now, I didn't pull this up for us to go through, but there was one interesting thing in the report. And what it said was that manufacturers are unable to pass on all of their price increases to the consumers. Again, talk about a liquidity trap. There it is. All right, let's go to the 7-year auction. Now, the 7-year auction was poorly received. This is one of the, not the worst, that was last week or last month, one of the worst treasury auctions, 7-year treasury auctions in history. The bid to cover was slightly below its 6-month average. And, it's not like the numbers were, I guess what was bad about it is there wasn't that as much foreign bidding as there has been in the past. But one thing I found very interesting, and we're going to look at the dealer positioning here in a little bit, is look at the low yield, 0.08%. And I want you to think about why, if this is one of the worst in terms of, demand for a 7-year treasury auction, why were people bidding at 0.08%? Why did they do that? Well, we're going to try to answer that question in a bit. Let's go on. Tokyo core CPI, excluding food and energy, still deflationary at minus 0.1%. How about Tokyo CPI, deflationary at minus 0.2%? Look, they've done quantitative easing and fiscal stimulus, and they've done a lot of it, and they've done it simultaneously. They have deflation, and people in America think we're going to have inflation. Baffles me. Let's move on to, is this today's data? It is today's data. We have personal consumption expenditure price index went up 0.2% in February, year over year, up to 1.6%. Excluding food and energy, the core was only up 0.1, and the year over year rate of change missed expectations and slowed. It slowed from 1.5 to 1.4%. Now let's look at this from Fred chart. And I've got PCE, core PCE against core CPI. So both excluding food and energy, and you'll notice they're following each other. There's no sign of inflation in core, none. All the inflation you're seeing is food and energy. Food and energy, very dollar sensitive, and the dollar is looking perky. It's looking to move a little bit here. What else do we have in today's data? Yes, personal incomes. Largest one-month drop on record, fell 7.1% from 10%. So 10% the month before, minus 7.1. You want to see the effects of the stimulus going away. This lasted from, remember, this checks, you know, it was approved in December. People got them in January, and personal incomes fell in February. Now, what do you think is going to happen to this round of checks? It's going to last, what, April into May-ish, maybe, and then plunge? This is how weak the economy is, that incomes are entirely sensitive now on government transfers. And look at personal spending, 3.4 with stimulus, minus 1.0 without. It kind of makes sense when you look at the big picture that the situation is not all that great. All right, let's take a look at the primary dealer positioning. Now, this is real interesting because we're going to look at that seven-year data. Primary dealers, now this data is updated weekly. It's on the New York Fed website. They dumped half of their T-bill positions. Now, there's something we can talk about here is what's going on with the dealers as we look through this data. Is there demand? Could be. I mean, could there be very strong demand and that's why they did it? Could be. Could it be that due to the TGA, the Treasury's bank account going down due to all this money going out, that the dealers needed to get some of the stuff sold to provide cash to the Treasury? That is also entirely possible. We don't know exactly what happened, but what is interesting is I want you to think about looking through this. If dealer inventory is going down, which it is, and it's getting low, will the dealers need to hedge to the downside much? And what happens in general when a store runs low on inventory and there's demand for that product? You know, prices go up, which means yields go down. All right, so let's take a look at the rest of the data here because there's some interesting stuff going on. So first of all, T-bills, they went from $48 billion to $24. And now if you think that that's a low number, it is. If you can go back 52 weeks and you can find out that doesn't appear offhand that it's ever been that low in the last year. Now let's go look at coupons. Because there's some interesting things going on in coupons. So here you see 2-year, and what are they? They're holding $39.5 billion. This number's down. The Fed is buying a lot of 2-year notes. But look at 3-year, right? Between 2 and 3, it went negative. So that means there's so many people short 3 years that it went negative, just like the 10-year, which is negative. And remember, we've had those negative overnight repo rates on the 10-year because of this. Now you see the dealers, because so many short positions, have a negative inventory in 3 years. How about we move over to fives? They're sitting, you know, they've backed down their positions. You know, no change from last week. Here's the thing that gets me the most. Remember that 7-year number, right? The 7-year Treasury auction. Remember, it's poorly received every month. You would think that the dealers would be holding on a massive amount of these, or you'd see it pop up and then spend down and then pop up and spend down. You notice that doesn't really happen. In fact, they're only sitting on $6 billion of these things, which means they're having no trouble moving these on the secondary market. None at all. It's just the auctions that look bad. The dealers have no problem moving inventory. That, to me, is pretty interesting. Oops, now I've got a problem because I can't scroll unless we shrink this back down. All right, let's move over. We've got the 10s. We said they have a negative balance due to massive shorting. Yeah, I told you a 7-year one, what you see, they go like, wow, that doesn't really make any sense. It doesn't. You'd think this number would be huge. And how about the long bond? Dealers continue to pare back on this a little bit. But of all the ones they're still holding on a lot of, it's the long bond, because guess what's one that they can make the most money on? Not the T-bills. Which one can you make the most profit on if rates go down? Yeah, that's a long bond. All right, let's take a look at the assets and liabilities of all commercial banks. And some very interesting things here as well. Bank credit shrank $6 billion last week. Securities and bank credit up $50 billion. Now, I want to preface this for a second. Remember, everybody said, in the banks said, we're going to dump Treasury securities, right? You cancel that SLR exemption and you ain't seen nothing but Treasury dumping at you know, huge scales you've never seen before. I want you to be thinking that as we go through this data, because this data is as of the end of last week. And that, and when did the Fed make that announcement? They had their presser on what, Wednesday, and then the SLR announcement on what, Thursday. Keep in mind as we go through this. So securities and bank credit up $50 billion. Mortgage-backed securities, which the Fed has been buying a lot of, up $5 billion. U.S. Treasuries, ready for this? Up $32 billion. Now this isn't back to their all-time high, but it's back above the highest print in January at $1.237 billion. We're at $1.241 billion. You wonder who bought Treasury securities last week? Yeah, the banks. The banks who said they were going to sell Treasury securities. In fact, they bought so many, they bought $50 billion of bonds last week after they knew knowing the SLR exemption was going away. Crazy, right? Loans and leases at all commercial banks down $5 billion. Real estate down 12 with residential, looks like down $1 billion, nothing significant. Commercial down 2. Consumer loans, how about consumer loans are down, looks like what, $1 billion there. Credit cards down $2 billion. So yeah, not seeing a lot of demand in the consumer space. How about this, cash assets? Is your stimmy checks problem hitting the bank? Up $262 billion. My friends, that's bond bullish. Because, you know, do you understand why that's bond bullish? Is not because of my shirt doing the thing that it does that you all love. It's because, you know, when money hits the commercial banking system, right? Someone emailed me asking, can you explain this again? All right, so when money hits cash, hits the commercial banking system, the commercial bank's got to pay you interest, right? I mean, even though I know it's not worth the ink on the paper anymore, but they've got to pay you interest. How do they do it? They can take your money and lend it out. They're not really doing, or they can buy an interest generating asset, a treasury security. And so what happens is bank deposits are converted to bank reserves, which is a fancy word for saying, hey, Americans, we're taking your money and buying treasury securities, which you don't normally like to buy, but we're doing it with your money. And then the Fed comes along and does their quantitative easing swap with that reserve from the bank using customer deposits, and then the banks get the reserve asset. That's how this works. So when you see cash assets going up, think banks buying bonds. All right, let's take a look at what's going on with lending contraction. Now, I want you to keep in mind, lending, when lending contracts, money is destroyed. Real estate loan growth, negative 0.23% from a year ago. 6 and 3 month rate change, been negative, we already know that. Commercial industrial, remember I said by the end of this month this thing ought to be like zero? Well, boom, big drop off down to 2.59% from a year ago, pretty close. If it wasn't for that little bit of commercial industrial lending blip in the couple weeks ago, this probably would be at zero. 6 month rate change is negative, 3 month rate change is zero. How about loans and leases? All commercial bank down to zero. This should be a negative 0.1, but we'll go with it because I typed it in. 0.17% from a year ago, so zero. 6 month rate change is negative, 3 month rate change is zero. How about the consumers? Hey, this was up to minus 12.6 from minus 12.7% from a year ago. So why does this contraction in lending actually matter? Because when you think about the money supply, right, the M2, how does it grow? No, how does it normally, in a perfect monetary system that's functioning properly, the M2 should grow due to lending growth, right? So I take out a loan, money gets deposited in the banking system, and then I use it, or it gets paid to someone I'm buying something from, deposited into the banking system. That's how the M2 should grow. Now, lately, it's also been growing because we're borrowing from non-M2 sources, foreign sources, and that's showing up as stimulus checks. So some people are confused by that. They see it growing and they say, well, it's not growing by lending growth. It must be money printing. No, it's from non-M2 sources outside the country, outside the commercial banking system. So if we're having no lending growth, none, what is the growth of the M2, or if we have a contraction where money is destroyed, going forward, what is the M2's growth going to be entirely dependent on? Government transfers, fiscal stimulus, and that's a problem. So we're going to get a month or two bump out of the stimulus checks in the M2, maybe a month and a half. I don't know how long it takes to pay this whole thing out. at the rate we're seeing lending growth continue to fall, it's going to then go negative, being a negative against the growth of the M2, because it's destroying money. Not massive amounts, but it's going to be destroying money. That is not inflationary. Does it start to make sense why that money multiplier is so cool? Because you're seeing, you know, the monetary base grow more proportionally than the money supply. And we can already predict forward without ongoing fiscal stimulus, because we're not getting lending growth because everyone wanted higher rates. And hey, higher rates turn out not to be inflationary because people don't want to borrow at those rates. You're going to get more disinflation and potentially outright deflation. My friends, thank you for being fans. Thanks for liking. Thanks for subscribing. Thanks for sharing me with your friends and family. I will see you on Sunday for the chart show. I'll try to find that other chart for Monday. We're going to look at the dealer positionings in the futures market then and all that good stuff. And be sure to check out the article in the link below. I hope you enjoy that. Have a great weekend. Bye now. The content of this video provides educational information only. It's not intended to provide investor or other advice. Serial is not to be construed as a recognition or solicitation by a security firm, instrument, or to participate in any particular trading strategy. Serial was paired by Steam Van or personal capacity, business expressive video that do not affect the view of Atlas Financial Finding or Steam Van Meter Financial.